Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Education Is podcast. As always, I'm your host, Nicole Forsyth, here with
Alan Paterka.
And we're also joined by our guest,
Alyssa King. Yeah.
Hello, Alyssa.
Welcome.
We are doing things just a little bit differently today on the podcast. We're not going to tell you what education is this time. Instead, we're just going to explore it together. Before we do that, Alyssa, tell us a little bit about what you teach here at Kirkwood and your background.
Sure. Well, I am finishing up my second year here at Kirkwood in the social science department. I teach sociology courses, primarily introduction to sociology and marriage and family.
Excellent. And what's your educational background?
Okay, so I have a liberal studies degree followed by a master's degree in sociology, and then my PhD is in educational leadership and policy studies, all from Iowa State University.
Go Cyclones. Fabulous. And recently you had a professional development opportunity. So tell us about that. Tell us where you went, how you got the funding for it.
Sure.
And we'll go from there.
Well, so I had been told about the University of Iowa does a India abroad trip over their winter interim. And so my partner's in the social work grad program at University of Iowa, so his cohort, many of his classmates, were going on this trip. So I had been informed about it, and I thought, well, that sounds really interesting, and I haven't done a whole lot professional development-wise in that regard, and I enjoy traveling, and I wanted to learn more. So I thought, I will look into this professional development award that I knew was out there, courtesy of the Master Teacher Program, where we learned about this. And so I looked into it and looked into the offerings of the courses. There were about 13 courses being offered the 2012-2013 winter interim. And I found one that was social entrepreneurship is what it was about. It was the closest one related to some of my interests in education and trying to find a way to relate sociology to that. So I applied for the Professional Development Award and received it. However, in the meantime, that course didn't make. So I had to select a different one, which ended up being an education transformation, leadership transformation course, primarily situated with K-12, but they also had added a component of looking at the colleges and universities in India. So that was really a strong interest of mine, and that ended up being the one that I went with.
And so the funding came from Kirkwood, just for our
Correct.
Listeners, so the institution where we're employed. But it was actually, the trip you went on was through the University of Iowa.
Right.
And you went to India, and what happened?
What didn't happen? So we left about 2 days, December 28th, I think is about when we left, and flew out of Chicago and landed in Chennai, India, which is in southern India. So my actual class was made up of, I think there were about 9 of us. There was a faculty member from University of Iowa that was leading it. There was another faculty member who was just going along, who wasn't leading it but was present. And then I was going as a faculty shadow / student because I was really interested in how is this program working and then can I bring it to Kirkwood? So that was sort of my goal of going on the trip as well.
And were there other people there? Who was making up the majority?
The majority were students. They were undergraduate students of University of Iowa. Mm-hmm. And of all the courses, almost all of them were undergraduate with some graduate students from University of Iowa.
Still in like an education leadership program?
Or? Actually, no. The classes range from a lot of medical classes. And there were some environmental, like sustainability courses. There was the education course. There was one about tigers that I don't think made, but it was there for quite a while. And so it's a really kind of a broad range, sort of what are the interests of the faculty at the University of Iowa. And then, you know, most of them had, I would say, anywhere from 10 to 25 students that went. So we landed in Chennai, and then we took a very long 10-hour bus ride to Madurai, which is where we ended up staying in a residential school called the Mahatma Schools. So it was a family that owned these schools. And our course was really looking at how these schools work. We would go each day and look at the, observe the classrooms, a lot of presentations, a lot of entertainment from the students, a lot of food. And what was really interesting is when we got off the bus at the school where we stayed, it is owned by a family where their son and daughter had been on Kirkwood's campus just 2 months prior, so in October, and I had met them then.
Oh, that's excellent.
Yeah, so it was really neat to get to see them again.
A nice local connection. So were you at the same school the whole time in India?
We went to four different schools. We lived on the same campus, residential school campus, but we visited, so we were there for 3 weeks. So, you know, it was split fairly evenly across these four different schools, and then I was able to go to a university, a women's college, that was primarily social work, and had sort of a roundtable discussion with the graduate students there.
Hmm, fantastic.
Yeah.
So the risk for me is always to be like, oh, tell me about the food and all the cool intercultural thing. But to kind of keep the focus a little bit on education, what did it mean to you to be able to go as kind of a faculty member, not just to kind of help, you know, learn the ropes of leading a study abroad for Kirkwood itself, but kind of how did this develop you as a teacher? And sort of any other thoughts you have about what it meant as development for you?
Yeah, well, I wouldn't have been able to go if I hadn't had the financial resources provided by Kirkwood. So that's huge. Mm-hmm. And after that, as a sociology professor, I mean, it was like a golden opportunity to experience a different culture and different foods, which is part of that, to watch my traveling companions navigate a different culture. So that was really interesting from a sociological perspective, seeing how they were dealing with that culture shock. I've traveled a fair amount. Some of them, their first trip on a plane was this trip.
Wow.
And all of that, I mean, right back in the fall semester, or excuse me, the spring semester, that was one of the first things I talked about, was I just got back from India, and this relates to everything we're covering. Relationships in my marriage and family class, I mean, I talked at length with the family we were living with about arranged marriages. Because their kids had arranged marriages, but they didn't. They had a love marriage, and how they were sort of ostracized from their family and hadn't talked to their family in 20-some years because of that. I mean, really interesting stuff. So I feel like it really made me grow as a faculty member, just being able to bring in another culture, bring in, you know, class differences. When I talk about poverty, I saw poverty in India, you know. And I saw just that disparity of wealth versus no wealth, you know, bathing in your front yard and cows wandering the streets and, you know, so really, really fascinating, really real world stuff. That, and I have pictures to go along with those stories that I can then tie those concepts to. So being able to see it myself and then really wanting to create a study abroad experience for Kirkwood students to be able to go and have that exposure, and huge.
So is that a next step for you to put together some kind of a study abroad for students here?
Yes.
And what do you think about, like, what kind of things would you plan for that kind of a trip?
So that plan is sitting at home on my desk, written out and complete. It's looking at, I started it right when I got back. I met with Don Wood and sort of the Study Abroad Office International and talked with her about what can we do, how do I do this process. So in addition to having the professional development, I'm also developing in terms of how do you put a study abroad experience together. So I initially thought, you know, how great to go back and do what I just did, because I know the people, I know the accommodations, I know the food. The reality is that's already pretty well set up for University of Iowa. So working with some of the faculty at University of Iowa to see what are some other organizations in India that might be interested in partnering with Kirkwood. So I narrowed it down to a few, and I would say at this point, as of today, we have an organization narrowed down. We're in the sort of negotiating stages of, can you accommodate, I don't know, 20 students? What does that accommodation look like? What's the budget? How much is it going to cost the students? What's travel going to look like? Health issues. I mean, I had to go through a pretty strong regimen of you know, malarial meds and yellow fever and typhoid and all that. Mm-hmm. And that costs money. as well. So what's going to be the process and what kind of a package can we put together for students? And is it going to be safe for them to go, you know? So that's where I am, is waiting to get all the communication from all the different pieces together so I can wrap up the proposal and give it back to Don.
Nice.
Yeah.
So, Alan, excuse me, you led a study abroad experience in China a couple years ago.
I did.
I'm wondering if, yeah, tell us about how that came to be and how that worked for you as a teacher and professional.
So it was kind of put into my lap. Fortunately for me, I didn't have the entire process to go through that you're describing to find that host that really wanted to support you when you're over in the country. It was they found us instead, and we said, well, this would be great. Let's try it. Let's go for it. But it was really interesting. I thought it was really interesting hearing you talk about how you were able to watch the reactions of the other people on your trip. That's pretty much how I spent my time on the trip in China. I thought it was fascinating watching them try to understand why there were cigarette lighters in these shops that had Saddam Hussein's image on them, and then how they came to terms with that, and whether or not they thought it was kitschy or they thought it was weird or just plain wrong. Every turn it was like that. Every little waiting for the dinner to be served, it was like, well, what's happening and how are they interpreting this particular moment? And it was just wonderful to see them and see the minds, because I hadn't been to China for a couple of years, and to revisit it along with students who are visiting it for the very first time was a remarkable experience for me.
Hmm. Interesting. I didn't do a study abroad experience when I was in college, but I'm always struck by the way people talk about these sort of formal learning experiences, which of course we all know it's a lot of how do I get around? What do I eat? Oh my gosh, the bathrooms are strange.
Oh,
yes. What an intense, right? I mean, these things have real impacts on your day-to-day life. What intense experiences they are. I don't know if that ties back to education. I think it is an education, right? It's a different kind of education than maybe what we sometimes think in terms of book learning.
Yeah, I think study abroad, well, it certainly depends on what subject the faculty going, teach. I feel fortunate with at least teaching sociology. Anywhere I take students is going to be a sociological experience because we talk about culture and norms, mm-hmm. and all of those elements. And so even just, you mentioned bathrooms, you mentioned foods, and all those things that I think we take for granted, what's it like to have 90 degree weather and no air conditioning and huge mosquitoes all the time, and really very educational, but it's not, like you said, not that formal sort of book mm-hmm. experience.
Was there a trip that you missed out on, Nicole, when you were an undergrad yourself that you thought about going on a study abroad trip, or and then you just decided, nah, it's not for me?
I did a study domestically, as cheesy as that. No one called it that. That's what I called it myself. I was really interested in, there's this program that my college did through the Associated Colleges of the Midwest, and I went to school in Colorado, and I was always like, I don't know why we're part of this consortium, but whatever. We're not from the Midwest. But it was a chance to live in Chicago for 6 months and kind of get involved in the life of the city. And I grew up in Denver. It's not like I wasn't familiar with cities, but it was really a very sort of social justice activist-focused program. And sort of all of the people I gravitated to in college had done it. So I was like, oh, this sounds cool. I'm going to do this, right? I have complicated feelings about travel, which Ellen and I may have expressed sometimes. I'm just always a little uncomfortable when my experiences of travel, although somewhat limited, have often been very touristy, mm-hmm. and I grew up in Colorado, which is a very heavy tourist economy, and I worked in it as a young person. So I was just always worried about travel as exploitation.
Right.
So in college, I was like, this is a great chance to go somewhere I haven't been before, learn a lot about sort of American life, put sort of that lens we put on with foreign countries on kind of American life in some ways. So I learned a ton about immigration policy and practice. I learned about the city of Chicago, sort of the politics of the place and all the uniqueness that is, like, this great American city. I took some other classes, like, on the neighborhood that I lived in. And then I got to live in a neighborhood. Like, we were fully based. They rented out apartments in all these different neighborhoods. I had friends who were white kids from, California, who lived in these pretty enclave-like communities, and then they were on the south side of Chicago. And that was amazing and fascinating. And I happened to live on the north side of Chicago in a really diverse neighborhood. I lived in a little brownstone, and some of my friends lived in this high-rise where it was something like 70 languages were spoken within the building. And you're just like, wow, America's this amazing, cool thing. So I didn't study abroad, but I did have a very similar kind of experience that I've always been sort of intrigued with. Now that I live in Iowa, a lot of the students I meet and get to know often seem like maybe they haven't had a lot of worldly experiences. I'm mentoring a student who comes from a rural area and just watching her learn to interact with Cedar Rapids, which to my mind, I'm like, that's Cedar Rapids. Doesn't seem very urban to me sometimes, but I think she's having a very different experience with it. So I'm kind of interested in what does it take to transition people from living in a rural life to a slightly more urban life. So that's just been kind of my experience with that's what I did in college.
And is there a pretty, there's probably a pretty stark difference between, you said that was a 6 month
experience. Yeah, it was a full semester, and then I was there before and after.
And then, like, I know my trip to China was like 14 days, and that can lend itself. I mean, I think a short trip can often lend itself to, well, you got to hit the hot spots, you know, you got to see the Great Wall, you got to do that. And so, so it can lend itself to that touristy kind of.
And that's something, and I'm glad you bring that up, that issue of exploitation. And that's something that I think about a lot, because admittedly, this experience that I had, and we were told by other people, we were very insulated. We were on this wealthy family's property. So you would leave the gates of their property, drive through town to go to the next school, and you would see stuff that you just didn't see where you were staying. So, you know, with the study abroad that I, when I take students, it's important to me that they see the real, you know, India. Granted, yeah, there are some hot spots, like, you know, the Taj Mahal, okay? But if you're going to go all the way over there, I think not a bad...
You do have to see the Taj Mahal.
Yeah. So I just... But I don't want it to be like, here's this really insulated experience that isn't what most people are... the conditions that most people are living in.
Yeah. One thing that I think is interesting about all three of ours is there really is this component of, like, experience, and that you're learning things, you're taking it in with all your senses in a way that in a classroom, you know, we can show videos, we can have audio, we can have guest speakers, we can have performances, but it's never going to come anything close to being on the streets in Chennai with, like, the smell and the weather and just... There's a real different sensory experience to that kind of immersion.
And it's so all around you all the time. You can't get away from China. You can't get away from India when you're there.
I mean,
you're there, and you got to deal with it. You got to deal with what's in front of you. And I saw some struggles with that.
Agreed. Yeah, witnessing just, you know, people, I don't know how it was. You said 14 days for yours. So mine was 21 days. And people were all nice with each other for about the first seven. And then it got ugly. Because not only are you dealing with this external, brand new culture shock, it's now I have to deal with these people day in and day out, and I can't get away from them. And we didn't have internet access.
Ah, whoa, wait a second.
Whoa.
I don't know if I can do this trip now. Sorry, guys.
Yeah, but that was a huge thing, too, because anytime we were somewhere where there was wireless, everybody had, they had their iPhones. They had, you know, and they were on, they were Skyping, they were, and I thought, wow, people are really into their electronics. They can't unplug. And so that was another thing, because I worried, you know, you spend so much time being plugged in, even when you're traveling, are you really getting that educational experience in the same way?
What about a service learning component? Do you plan on doing something like that? I see that as a way, I mean, in reflecting on my own experience, and as a missing component to what we did in China. We didn't have that, really.
With the trip that I'm working on, Jody Weigel in Human Services is really interested in joining me and really having for his social work human service students doing service learning, although I'm still trying to sort out what service learning really looks like and if there's different ways that it can look. Because, you know, in some cases, you know, are we going to go and build houses? Probably not. That's not necessarily how what's available to us. But, like, this one organization that I'm looking at working with is a school. It's a school that takes children off the street and educates them. So for them, service is, can we come and speak in English to the students and help them improve their language skills? Because they view English as being this sort of global language, and that's a huge skill for these students. You know, do we have computer skills or sort of vocational skills that we can come in and help teach their students? So that is a different, I think, a different angle of service learning than maybe what a lot of people have initially come to mind. And so, you know, the human service students, I know a lot of them are really interested in doing more medically related things. This particular trip wouldn't have, that wouldn't be the focus of it, but the school has a health care unit. So there's kind of a lot of things available. It's just how do we conceptualize service learning?
Yeah, I think sometimes it's really a two-way street sort of service learning. It's like, you know, you sort of help me to unplug and kind of get away from my day-to-day life, and I'll help you with, you know, Microsoft Excel or something like that.
Right.
When I was in Chicago, I worked with a little itty-bitty nonprofit in the back of the yards, which is this old meatpacking neighborhood in Chicago. And I think the most valuable thing I did for them was help them with this Excel spreadsheet that they had. And it was just some real basic knowledge around sorting it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, had all these people's names, and it was so stressful for them. And I was like, man, I don't feel like I'm really doing anything here. But I think it really made a difference, just this little tiny thing that I was sort of able to bring to the table. So I like that discernment of kind of what can service learning mean and for whom,
mm-hmm.
and sort of the prejudices that we have about it. When we were setting up this podcast, Alyssa, we're in the master teacher program together and talk and think a lot about what professional development means. And Alyssa, I know, you know, you've been through a lot of formal American education. You've got a PhD, you're a faculty member. So, like, what does learning look like for you now that you're kind of outside of a formal system? Like, nobody's really telling you, most of the time at least, sort of how to develop yourself. So, you know, I think that was one thing I was thinking about in our conversation today. What does learning look like for you outside of the system now?
Well, I think I have to think about where I've been and where I want to go, and then how to get there. So when where I was previously employed, we had to do professional development, but it was very minimal. It was go to a workshop, or if you're taking college classes, that's okay. We didn't have to put together a portfolio in the way that we do for master teacher. And so I'm constantly thinking, I teach the same classes almost every semester, and I change things as needed, but that doesn't necessarily make me grow. That's let me help the students. So traveling to India, to be quite honest, was a big stretch for me. And thinking about what's going to be, is it going to push me out of my comfort zone? And then can I bring that back and talk openly and honestly about what that was? That's professional development. I am applying for things like the study abroad, preparing that. That's sort of out of my comfort zone, because can I take students to India and navigate all the things that I have no control over? I'm a bit of a control freak, a little bit. So, to me, that's, you know, professional development. I'm doing endowed chair. I received that award. So, doing a research project, and I swore after my dissertation I would never do research ever again, because it was so much work. And now I'm, you know, knee deep in it all over. So it's just what makes me uncomfortable, and then I should probably do that. That's sort of my rule.
That's an interesting rule to live by.
Yeah.
I like that.
Because, you know, why does it make me uncomfortable? So I should explore that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I came back from India and I was like, that's not so bad. I can take students. maybe.
I can do this.
And what were your former workshops like? And do you feel like they were helpful to get you to this spot? or
at my previous institution, I was generally leading those workshops.
Oh, okay.
Because they didn't have, I mean, I suppose they didn't have as developed of a program or process as what Kirkwood does. I mean, it's a smaller institution. They didn't have a KSELT. They didn't, it was just sort of bare minimum quality faculty plan, you know, need to meet those requirements, so we'll do the best we can. So those were workshops around diversity, around social justice, around classroom management and course design. Whereas here, you know, there's a much broader range of things. I often try to take stuff about international, working with international students or sort of global teaching partnerships, because I do think that is kind of where we're headed, at least having those connections. And I think, frankly, I think India is a pretty hot place to be making connections right now.
Mm. So... Well, and it's interesting to be in a room with Alan, because Alan works in the distance learning department.
Exactly.
And, I mean, the way that technology, in so many ways, we're really not limited to geography with how we have to learn.
Not at all, really.
Except time zones. Gets tricky.
Maybe language.
A little
sometimes.
Tricky.
Sometimes.
Yeah, language can be a stumbling block, I think. But by and large, I think if you're getting accepted to Kirkwood, you have at least TOEFL skills that are high enough to be able to read and write and sometimes that can be helpful to our foreign students because their speaking abilities may be quite a bit lower, but their reading and writing is strong enough to keep up with the class.
Hmm.
And we do have a number of students taking distance ed classes from overseas, and it's not a huge number, but I think it's a growing part of their expectation as being a Kirkwood student. They may have come here for a study abroad themselves, had the Kirkwood experience, and then go back home and say, hey, wait a second, I could keep taking classes back at Kirkwood. Mm. So let me keep doing that. Or
I'd never even thought about that. Our international students who go home, like,
sure.
They don't, their relationship with Kirkwood doesn't have to end.
Not always.
Well, and the other thing, another goal of mine for going abroad with students is in speaking with some of the faculty there, they were aware of Kirkwood because, as I mentioned, some of their teachers had been here. And so they said, you know, we're really interested in your hospitality management. That would be a really good skill for our students. So they're talking about sending their students to our program here. And, you know, and so just those relationships. And then, like you said, being able to do distance ed. Or I took a workshop through the international student office about teaching, co-teaching, where you might have one person at Kirkwood and somebody in India, and you're teaching. Yeah, the challenges, of course, were just technology and also time zones, but they had live classes, and they were working together, and that's pretty incredible. Because it does, I mean, airfare is not cheap, so that way you can get some of that interaction as an option.
So what would you guys think a sort of theme for this podcast might be? You know, in the past we've had education is blendable, you can blend your learning. You've had education is intimately involved with motivation, right? We have to understand our motivation to learn.
I think education doesn't have boundaries. I mean, there's no...
Boundless. I was going to say global.
That was my initial word.
Nice. I like that.
I mean, and that can mean a whole lot of things, you know, because it doesn't have to be out of a book. It can be the world. It can be your classroom. That's what I experienced. But then you also have all these other kinds of ways of teaching and learning and growing professionally.
I wonder if you can speak a little bit about, after you went to India, and then you came back and you reflected on the experience, and then you had to teach a brand new term. Did you change a lot? I mean, aside from just pulling in those experiences and sharing those experiences with your students, did other things change in your class?
That's a really good question. I think I was more aware of my position as being able to open students' eyes a little bit. I'm usually excited about what I teach, but I've been teaching for a really long time, not here, but just in general. And Intro to Sew, which was the very first class I ever taught in whatever, 2002 is when I started teaching it. So that class can get, you know, old pretty quickly. But I love teaching it. So it's like I came back with more excitement about this one course in particular that I teach over. And like in the fall, I teach four sections of it. And it's like, hey, you know, a renewed excitement. So I think I, being able to travel energized me more so that I wasn't just coming in and like, and here we go again, chapter one. Which the students wouldn't know, right? Because they haven't worked with me before. But I had more energy because I had this sort of new lens. And also, I came in and I said, hey, if you want to travel, or even if you don't think you want to travel, you do want to travel. And let's figure out a way to make that possible and get them excited about it. Even if it's not now, even if it's in 5 years, like save a dollar from every paycheck if you can so that you can go somewhere, even if it's Chicago, even if it's Colorado, you know. So I think I was more excited again. Just, it revved me back up.
Any additional expectations you have on the students now? I mean, you said you want them to study abroad and you're encouraging that. I guess that's a good example of one.
It is, but I also have to be aware of, you know, that's not feasible for everybody for a variety of reasons, and I am aware of that. It's, I want to plant the seed that even if it's not to travel abroad, go outside that comfort zone, because, you know, this is what can happen for you. It doesn't have to be traveling if that's not your thing. It could be going from rural Iowa to Cedar Rapids, Iowa, which for some students is rural, and for other students it's terrifying. And so, and exploring it in that way, you know, let's talk about culture shock and what does that look like. So I don't know that I have these expectations that they're gonna want to jump on a plane. That's not going to be feasible for everybody, but I just getting more excited about what's around them, their surroundings, and being involved in it. I always want them to be involved. You're not a robot. Like, open your eyes, you know, be aware of what's happening and your impact on those surroundings. I mean, that's my job. That's what I teach.
Nicole, what's your comfort zone with, where do you push yourself out of your comfort zone?
What are your edges?
My edges are edges? Here in my box. For those of you listening to the podcast, I'm miming.
It's a good mime.
You know, it's a good question. I don't know.
People keep telling me I'm asking good questions.
Alan, you ask good questions.
Okay, thank you.
Next question.
Let's move on.
You know, it's a really a question I'm not quite sure how to answer. Mm. You know, there are definitely things that make me uncomfortable, travel being one of them, for things I've talked about. I do definitely have, I remember when I was in high school and I was like, ugh, habits and routines are terrible. Like, these are just awful things, and I never want to have them, and I want new things all the time. And part of what I really enjoy about being a librarian is my days are very different in a very similar sort of way. Like, I'm in the library, I'm helping students, but I'm helping students with a huge, I mean, the questions we get are really, really interesting and varied, and I enjoy variety. But as I get older, I realize I become more a creature of habit, and I think for me, my comfort zone often does lie in habit. The ways that I work online. You know, I've recently been like, man, I am not playing with as much technology as I used to. You know, because it's kind of comfortable. I'm like, I got my things, they work this way. Mm-hmm. And one thing I love about this podcast and the faculty that we meet is everybody's pushing in a different way. So, you know, I don't really know what my, there are definitely things that make me uncomfortable. Maybe I should do them more.
See, go after the stuff that's scary.
I remember I was, a long time ago, listening to the radio, and a professional athlete was talking about how she always did these crazy things like skydiving and mountain climbing because she felt she had to push herself in order to continue to improve at her sport. So, mm-hmm. You know, I can see. I don't know, Alan, what's your comfort zone?
This is it right here.
Are we at the end?
This is really hard for me to do a podcast with you. No.
Wow, sweet.
Yeah. No, I think, we've talked before about being introverted, and I think having those experiences where you have a lot of people and being very social, I think, is can be a challenge for, for me personally and professionally. And so speaking up in a large kind of symposium area can be a challenge. And so if I'm ever able to do that, I do find myself often being my own worst critic and saying, well, I was in that situation, I had something to say, and I didn't say it, and I probably could have contributed, but I was just a little too nervous, a little too quiet. And so, yeah, I'm with you with pushing yourself out of the comfort zone and pushing our students out of their comfort zones. They get locked into things pretty quickly. I have a lot of students who are locked into using Google Translate for their assignments, and I keep saying, stop using that. It's not helping you do anything. And they're like, I have to. I'm like, you don't. You have so many other choices. They just don't see them right away, or it's harder to get to them, and it means more mental activity to do them. And it requires a little bit of stress in their minds, but it's what, from what I keep telling them, it's a useful thing to do, and it's worth their time, and it's worth their energy if they really want to learn the stuff.
I like that.
I was thinking about specifically this most recent trip, where was I pushed? And I'll tell you what, I don't really like children. And that is relevant because it was K-12, and I was terrified because I don't know how to interact with young kids at all. No clue. So we go into these schools, and you have hundreds of little kids that are super excited to see you, and they want to touch you, and they want you to interact, and they want you to sit down on the floor with them and make crafts. And it was terrifying for me. That, and then we were expected to, so the kids would entertain us, they would do skits, they would do dances, they would do all these things, and then the teachers would turn around and look at us and be like, it's your turn. And one by one, they'd hand us a microphone and want us to show a talent. I did not get the memo that I was supposed to come to India with a talent. I did not have one prepared. Whereas all my traveling companions, you know, were in the education fields, they liked children. They had had interactions with children. So they were singing. They were the ants go marching. You know, they were doing all kinds of stuff that I realized all of a sudden, I would get heart palpitations. I was so anxious about it. Of course, when we had to do a 20-minute presentation in front of 500 people, I was like, oh, I've got this. This is cake. And they're all freaking out because they are, you know, they're like, you know, reading straight from their slides. And I just went up there, took the mic, and did my thing. But it was really clear to me that just being silly, I don't know how to. I can do it in my classroom. It's different. But I don't. Being silly for little kids, and it was not. I need to develop a talent. I'm thinking the yo-yo maybe would have been. I thought I could do push-ups or something physical, but the reality is women in India don't really do push-ups and because
yeah.
You
or
know
aspire to. Yeah.
Or yeah, so it was tough. So it wasn't the food, it wasn't the toilets, it wasn't the mosquitoes, it wasn't the monkey that broke into my room. It was the kids.
I'll say as a parent of a 2-year-old, they can be really terrifying, but that's a really interesting perspective, the things yeah. that make us comfortable
yeah.
and uncomfortable. Do you have people or things in your life that push you to go outside your comfort zone? I mean, Melissa, it sounds like you push yourself a fair amount.
Right.
I'm just kind of curious, how can we set up situations where other people can help push us?
I would say it's not a matter of being pushed, but it's being supported.
Being supported. Okay.
So, because I'm thinking about my own life, you know, I have a partner who's like, go. Just go. I got this at home. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll talk to you in 3 weeks. If we don't have internet connection, that's fine. I have family, my parents. I taught them how to use Skype right before I left. My mom was so excited she could do it and see me. She's like, I see you. You know, just so I had that support to go. There wasn't like, you can't do that. You shouldn't do that. We're not going to make that available. It was the support, it was financial support from Kirkwood, personal support from my family. So I think that's really important. The opportunity being presented and then go give it a try. If it doesn't work out, that's okay. You tried it. I don't know. How do you feel about that, Alan?
No, I love that answer. I think, pushing people, my initial reaction to the question was, you push somebody, they're going to push back. Mm. And that's not going to get you anywhere. But I do like the idea that people can be supportive of others in their in whatever endeavor that would actually get them out of their comfort zone. I think that the danger, though, is that somebody's not going to seek out that opportunity, and then they just miss it. And so if you don't have somebody who's actually being actively supportive and pushing you, not in a pushy way, but in a supportive way,
right?
Then I guess it can work. I guess I just talked myself
pushing,
into a loop.
Shoving,
I don't know.
I mean, yeah. what's the difference here?
Right.
I feel like I'm really game. So when I was in college, I had some friends who kind of wanted to have a band for this end of every year we had a music festival at our college. I have no musical talent, no singing talent, unlike Alan, who I hear is very talented at singing. So I volunteered to be in this band. I'm not quite sure why. That's actually how I met my husband. And now it's like Chuck and I talk about that, and he's like, I can't see you doing that now. I don't know. I feel like I'm really open to being pushed. I'm really game for things, but it's a matter of, I don't know. I think I'm.
Do you want to come to India this winter? Because you can.
Might have to talk about the 2-year-old thing, but yes. I don't know. I think I wonder sometimes too about students and learners. Because I see it in my one-on-one interactions with them. I'm not in a traditional classroom, of course, but sometimes when I push them, like they'll come up to me. Like today, I had a student ask. Tell me what I need to know to start a bar in Cedar Rapids. I'm like, okay, what do you think you need to know to start a bar in Cedar Rapids? He's like, well, I don't know. I guess I have to have employees. I'm like, okay, so maybe you need to find out about what it means to employ someone. You know, I think he was just wanting to be pushed to think about it. Mm-hmm. He wanted me to give him the answers, but I don't know, kind of into pushing.
Well,
push me.
Yeah, and I think something that happens differently in a traditional classroom versus, let's say, the world as your classroom is that no one has the answers when you're traveling abroad. Mm-hmm. It's like you really need to just figure it out with what's available to you. And it does, I think a lot of times students do rely very heavily on, please just give me the answers, because it's scary to think because I might fail and I don't have the support if I fail. So I think that's another part of that environment that needs to be cultivated is give it a try. You know, it's okay.
One thing that I think is kind of interesting in that is, you know, when you're traveling with someone, I assume in a study abroad experience, like you're just saying, that traditional student-teacher wall really comes down. And I'm just really interested in that. I have lots of interesting thoughts about that student-teacher wall, but I think the more we can be co-learners with our students, I know that can sound a little cheesy and abstract, but however we can encourage that, like, I'm so on board with that. Because I'm a learner. I mean, I learn stuff all the time. My approach with students is, I don't know how to start a bar in Cedar Rapids, but let's talk about it. Let's, you know, let's figure it out together. And that, I think, is just better for the learner, and it's better for me. I don't know.
Yeah,
that's part of that. I think you miss that a lot in a formal classroom, because the teacher is already set up as the knowledge expert in the field, so they've kind of learned it all, at least at some point. And then so the student kind of just assumes that part of the process, they don't get in on that part of the process for this area anyway.
Yeah, and you're right. I think when you travel, that just shifts the dynamics completely. And I was in a very unique position because most of them didn't know I was a faculty member because they're at a different school. But so I would get introduced by the teachers there as Dr. King, and then so my travelers then, their view of me shifted. But at the same time, I wasn't actually facilitating their learning in that way that the lead faculty member was. So it was a really, and the lead faculty member didn't view me as a faculty member because I'm not in that same department. I'm not a coworker. It was a great position to be in to watch, to observe. It was an unsettling position to be in for other reasons. But I think, yeah, when you get out of the classroom, then, you know, you kind of have to navigate it together. So I don't think it's cheesy. I think that co-learner sort of what's happened in our world, I think that's exactly what goes on.
Well, I really like Education is Boundless. education is pushing our comfort zones in many ways, whether we push each other or we push ourselves and support each other. Thank you guys for the great conversation. Any final thoughts?
Nothing from this side.
No, I think we're good. Thanks.
Awesome. Well, thanks, Alyssa, for participating with us. Nice to see you as always, Alan. You can visit us online at www.educationis.us. Thanks.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.